Hi, I'm Emily Roger, host of the Boiling Point podcast. My co-host, Dave Vail, and I will bring you thoughtful discussions with leaders who are positively impacting our world. This is the Boiling Point, where leadership and inspiration meet.
Hello, Dave Vail.
Long time.
Yeah, well, since yesterday.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, we did a run through the tech works. I shouldn't have said that because that'll jinx it right there. But it was more my tech that we generally are worried about than your tech. But that was, yeah, it was good to catch up with you yesterday. And, you know, for the listeners, you know, we generally have this, I have a question. It was like, where has Emily been lately? And I think the last, every time I ask you this question, you come, you know, you some exotic place, but the last trip, pretty amazing. So maybe you can give just a quick highlight of what you've been doing over the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've spent the last 5 weeks over in Africa, was filming a documentary there around sustainable travel and conservation. So with wildlife and with fly fishing and community involvement. And so was in South Africa and Lesotho and Botswana and Gabon. And so did a couple of weeks at a safari and then a couple of weeks fly fishing. And then I spent my Christmas doing a gorilla trek, which was that's not a part of the documentary. That was just something that I have always wanted to do since watching Gorillas in the Mist way back in, I think, 1987. So it was kind of fulfilling a lifelong childhood dream and just had such a fantastic time. And just, yeah, it's still all slowly kind of settling in. It feels quite surreal, but I think that the most beautiful thing is that it was captured on film. And so the rest of the world and all the Boiling Point listeners will be able to see some of the things that we captured while there.
I can't wait. I actually found it interesting that you had said this prior to going, that you did not want the cameras on the gorilla portion. And the reason for that was,
you know, I think that there's certain things in life that we just need to fully experience on our own. And I took a few photos and videos like while I was in with the gorillas, like kind of amongst them, but not too much because I think that so often I just didn't want anything to take away from an experience that was just really important for me. And I'm glad that it went that way. And it was just a beautiful, really special moment. And it was so fascinating to see this gorilla family that had like 8 or 9 gorillas in it. And just the family dynamics amongst them was hilarious. I'm like, everything else now makes sense. Like, no wonder humans are the way that they are. Like, there was like little boys in the background, like getting into mischief, and this like one kind of teenage girl that was like too good to talk to anybody. And
were you hanging out with my family?
yeah, I was actually.
That is hilarious. Oh my gosh. Well, I look forward to hearing more. Let's move on because I don't have anything nearly as exciting to say over the last 5 weeks other than getting a little sick, taking a trip to Halifax. But I did spend some great time with family. So that was awesome. And, you know, I don't want to downplay that, but nothing as exotic as traveling to Africa. But I look forward to getting more information and actually, you know, seeing this documentary. It'd be really cool. So let's welcome our guest. We're going to bring in Andrew Oland, and we're doing this a little different. There's Andrew. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Andrew. Welcome to The Boiling Point.
Thank you very much. It's great to be on The Boiling Point.
Happy to have you. And so what we're doing, Andrew, a little bit different. I'm going to do a quick intro of you, and then you're going to tell me if I got it right or what I missed, and add to it if that's okay. So I'll start with Andrew is the president and CEO of Canada's Moosehead Breweries. It's independently owned and family run. We really want to dig into that because I find that fascinating. He serves on numerous boards, including Enterprise St. John, Beer Canada, which I'd love to learn more about Beer Canada as a big beer fan myself, Atlantic Institute for Market Studies, Tech Canada. He became the president of Moosehead Breweries in 2008 and has been the CEO since 2013. Is that factually correct?
Yes, that's factually correct. Just a little bit of a history for your listeners in terms of Moosehead breweries. In 1865, Susanna Oland, who would be my great-great-great-grandmother, she moved from England to Halifax, Nova Scotia, with her 9 children. And her husband, John, had gone on to Halifax a year ahead. And they were looking for a way to start to live the Canadian dream. And Susanna was a brewer in England. They were able to secure some funding, started a brewery in 1867, the same year we became a country. A couple of years later, John, her husband, died. They didn't have the whole thing papered as well as they should have. Susanna actually lost the brewery, continued to work at the brewery and brew the beer, was able to buy the business back a few years later. And here we are, you know, 156 years later, we are the largest independent brewery in Canada, largest brewery owned by Canadians. And the brewery is run by my brother, Patrick, our CFO, and myself, and then a great management and leadership team.
Okay, Andrew, this story just got way more interesting.
I can go through it, but essentially at every generation, they had like either a big decision or a big event, including, you know, the Halifax explosion, so largest man-made explosion prior to the nuclear bombs of World War II. My grandfather literally went to war for 3 years during World War II. We are headquartered in St. John, New Brunswick. You know, my father, in the early 60s, he went to one of these classic sort of Board of Trade type dinners, and there was a sign behind the speaker that said, export or die. And that was the inspiration for us to expand outside of Atlantic Canada. And because of some rules in Canada regarding selling beverage alcohol, we were actually selling beer in the United States before we were selling beer outside of Atlantic Canada. The way it works. So it's a really fun business, a challenging business, and look forward to sharing more with you.
Well, thank you for that. That's so important. I'm glad you dug it because the family history is rich. I've heard some of it before. Well, actually, one question I have is I was talking to a brewer and she was telling me that originally. Women were the brewers. Like, so your great, great, great grandmother, Susanna, like that was more commonplace.
That's true. If you think back to history through the Middle Ages and just before, everyone drank beer. And the reason was because particularly in Europe, the water just wasn't safe. Like the water would kill you. It was so contaminated. And one of the things that happens with beer is that beer has to be boiled. And so so literally, young children would go from being nursed to drinking sort of a very light alcohol beer, but which would have the nutrition element that beer has. And then just beer became, that was what it was like, 13th, 14th, 15th century throughout Europe.
Emily, I know you got a whole bunch of questions.
I know this is where it's like, okay, Emily, don't take over the entire conversation.
take over.
No, but you did, Dave, you asked my question around of it being predominantly women that were brewers. Is that still the case or?
No. So what would have happened is that for probably the last 100 odd years, the brewing industry was a male dominated industry, as most and many industries were. But then I think in the last 20 years or so, we've started to see a lot more women get into the beer business and get into brewing.
So how many generations is it now with you and Patrick? Like what generation are you?
Yeah, so Patrick and I are generation 6. My father, Derek's obviously generation 5. And then I have 3 adult children, so they've all worked in the brewery summer positions, 2 of Patrick's children have. So we've got multiple members of Generation 7 that have worked in the brewery. And I think 2 things, though. First of all, my father, Derek, who's 84, he has a great expression, nose in, hands out. So So he wants to know what's going on, but he's lets Patrick and I run the business. And then in terms of the whole transition succession planning, we have a rule in the family, which came from my father, that you have to work outside the business before you go into the business. So you can do whatever you're going to do, sort of post-secondary education, go somewhere else, learn, make some mistakes, get some good experience. And then if it's a fit for both parties, both the business and the individual, there may be opportunities to join the business.
Like it's not a foregone conclusion.
Definitely not. Definitely not. I mean, if you think, every group of five-year-old hockey players on the ice, their parents are like, oh, my Johnny's going to play in the NHL, right? Well, there's just, we know what that's. And business is it's a good fit for some people. It's not for others. And in particular, I'll call it senior leadership roles are a good fit for some, but they may not be for all. And the individuals need to take the time to figure that out for themselves.
And so what was your journey, Andrew?
So my journey is after university, the only place I knew I wasn't going to go work was Moosehead. So I looked around. I was living in Halifax at the time, and I ended up working at a shipyard in Halifax as a management trainee. Did that for a couple of years. It was just a lovely way to be exposed to everything from the production side of the business, sales side, the finance side, labor relations. So it was a really good experience. And then I actually was involved in the construction of a tugboat there, which last time I was in Halifax, it's still it hasn't sunk yet. So that's a good sign. And then came to Moosehead in 1993, started in our what we call our packaging department. So that's where we actually put the beer in the bottles and the bottles in the case, and then spent some time in brewing. Then I wanted to make a transition from the production side of the business to what we call the commercial side, which is sales and marketing. So we went back to school, did an MBA, and then after that, I had a series of roles, both sales and marketing. And then I was sitting in my office in December of 2007, and my father's assistant called me up and said, your father would like to see you in his office. And a little unusual that he would want to see me. So I went down and he said, the gentleman who's current president has just resigned and we'd like you to be the next president. And my immediate thought was, don't say anything, get out of the room as quickly as you can. They may change your mind if you say something stupid. So, so it definitely, it was a touch earlier than sort of, I was expected, but these things that there's no perfect timing. And, so it's been, an interesting run since.
Is there like a certain amount of pressure that comes along with that? You have that meeting with your father, you recognize that, wow, it's, that I'm going to be carrying the mantle here with my brother. Yeah, I guess you wouldn't have known at that time. I don't know where Patrick's role was at that point, but I'm just trying to get a sense of like that's a big commitment and ask given, being the sixth generation and the legacy and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's no different than the pressure that anyone else has to perform and to do a job well. You can't go into a role thinking, okay, I just can't screw this up. That's not how you approach things. And but I think in most people's cases, and certainly in my case, pressure is part of the motivation, right? What makes you work hard, what makes you grind through, and over time, you develop resilience and you get stronger.
What would the most, or some of the most valuable lessons for you have been when you look back now and even look at like working in the shipyard or for the tugboat, of lessons that you learned outside of Moosehead Breweries that you were really able to bring into your current position now?
Yeah, I think that what I learned before I came in is that in many ways, all businesses have so many similarities in terms of a team working together, trying to develop a common objective and then execute on that objective. I think my shipyard experience, the biggest learning there was just how much practical information, knowledge, and ideas that the frontline workers have, and the tremendous opportunity when you can tap in to the folks who are closest to the work or really doing the work.
And I've had the luxury of seeing you in a group of leaders, and I'm curious about how you describe your leadership style.
Well, my leadership style is still evolving, but I would say that my leadership style is I try to be collaborative. I'm working to provide with the team, but ultimately myself, to provide more clarity to the organization. And I believe the best leaders ask really, really good questions. And that's something that I've been challenging myself on. If I had sort of a do-over Andrew today versus Andrew 2008, I've learned the hard way. It's fine to say, I don't know the answer. And maybe it's not even my job to find out the answer. Maybe it's your job. And so it's more about what are those questions we should be, I should be asking, we should be asking ourselves, as opposed to immediately going into solution mode.
You're speaking to two coaches, so we appreciate that, Andrew, and I hope people are listening to what Andrew's saying related to the value of asking really good questions and not coming in with a solution.
You got an A+ on your answer, Andrew. As soon as you said that your leadership style was ever evolving, it was like I had my checklist. Yes.
And that there's a humility about that that is really appreciated, right? You know, and a confidence too, Andrew. Like from my perspective, sitting on the outside, I mean, that not everyone answers this question that way.
I was just thinking about this over the weekend because I knew I was going to be on this podcast. And I thought I'd tell this story as we all remember COVID. And for me, COVID started in the night the NBA shut down. And then I was at an offsite meeting on the Thursday, came back to the office on the Friday. There was lots going on. I remember one of my children called me in the afternoon of Friday and said, their office has sent everyone home. And I remember thinking, wow, they're sort of overreacting. And then we ended up, as everyone else did, sending everyone home we could on the Monday. But yet we were still functioning, brewing beer, packaging beer, doing all that type of stuff. But if you remember at the time, people were talking like COVID, we need a 2-week circuit breaker. We just need to slow things down for a while. And that weekend, I spent a lot of time online just reading, and I read a lot of Bill Gates stuff. And his message was, look, this could be years, and you have to prepare for that. And I can tell you, I was not in that frame of mind when that weekend began. And I can remember coming back first thing Monday morning when we had our whatever 9 a.m. call with my senior team. And I just said to them, look, we have to think about this differently. We have to be prepared that this could go for years. And I'm a little bit of embarrassed of how I acted the first week in terms of being not a COVID denier, but just not fully understanding it. And then fortunate, I was intuitive enough to go and try to get some perspective from some other folks who were more up to date with what's going on with pandemics. And that was fundamental for us in terms of just dealing with COVID.
Well, it was such a weird time. Like even for you to bring us back to that, like it's reminding me of, and it was just so many unknowns. And I can relate because I thought, oh, this will be a nice 2-week break and then we'll get back to it, right? And then after that 2 weeks, I don't know, for me, it became, oh my goodness, like, this isn't good. Like then it became, how do we make sure we survive this as a business, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, that was, I mean, I had that sort of 1 week of, you know, we're going to be back soon. And then it was really that Bill Gates stuff that just reinforced, like, this is the new normal. And we have to assume this is the new normal going forward. So we're always learning.
I love your concept around the nose in, hands out. And what a simple four-word thing that holds such great impact. And, you know, with that, I'm curious of, like, obviously, like, you are someone who was very introspective. When you look at your leadership styles and being the CEO, what are, like, the tendencies where you have to catch yourself, or are there, where you want to be hands in, nose out?
The first one is, like, I've never been afraid to make a decision. I love making decisions, right? So I can, whether it's my personal life or business life, let's make the decision. We can talk about it later. Let's make the decision first. So really sort of slowing down and taking the time, whether it's smaller decisions or bigger decisions. And then the second would be, I've learned, you know, I need to speak last or I need to speak later. And that even if I think my comments are perhaps, say, setting up a conversation or relatively minor, they can influence the conversation. And what I don't want is I don't want people to see that I'm going this way. Okay, we all got to go that way. Because really the most value is when you can have all of the different perspectives. And so what I've tried to do with questions, and it's still very much a work in progress, is, okay, let's put some questions on the table that really force us just to think about this in a different way. So if we did this and it didn't work, why would that be? Would our competitors want us to make this decision? What decision would our competitors not want us to? If we made this decision, what's the worst thing that could happen? And that takes the discipline of giving yourself time. And that's something that I like to be busy. And so I'm still a work in progress, but I've learned that you have to take the appropriate time to get some stuff done.
That's a really nice segue into, we got a little cheat sheet here. And I remember hearing your father say this, I believe it was Derek said this, I don't want to be the biggest, I just want to be around the longest. How does that adjust how you would be leading if in fact that's a statement you're kind of built around?
Yeah, no, it's a statement that, you know, father's made for many, very many years, and that, you know, my brother and I firmly embrace. I mean, I think some of your listeners may have heard Simon Sinek talk, and he talks about, you know, a finite game and an infinite game. And really, this statement is all about just, we're playing an infinite game here. Yes, we measure ourselves from time to time, but ultimately, it's just how do we get better sort of each and every day, every quarter, every year, across a broad spectrum of measurements, so that we're a more successful business and set up for long-term success. And that's, you know, the inspiration for my father, and that's what we try to do here every day.
I love the self-awareness that you have about knowing that you just love to make a decision.
We all have the way we're wired, and I have a confidence, so I'm prepared to suffer the risk reward in terms of a wrong decision, whether you're in a foreign city and it's, where are we going for supper? Oh, that looks good. Let's go there. Why would we take the time to read the review on Google? It looks good. Like, let's just go in there. Right. So, I'm sure a little bit of it is a sort of a bit of a dopamine rush from just making a decision, getting something done, going on to the next one.
Hi, I'm Steve Yerko.
And I'm Tara Sands. Now available from Maji Media is our new podcast, 4Kids Flashback. 4Kids is the company who brought you the English dub of Pokemon in the late 90s and so many other shows like Yu-Gi-Oh!, Shaman King, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Kirby, the infamous One Piece dub, and so many more.
We'll be talking to the people who worked at 4Kids. Actors, directors, writers, editors, producers, engineers, you get the point. And hopefully get the answers to questions both you and I have about the company.
I actually worked there as a voice actor on some of the shows.
And I was a kid watching the shows and remember way more than Tara does.
And thank God for that. Steve is actually a professional storyboard artist, which gives some really unique insights into anime and animation. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. That's the number 4 Kids Flashback.
So if you think of your tenure, like what are the most important decisions you've made or been part of making or, you know, or the business has made with your leadership to be still relevant in 2024? Because I'm guessing there's points in time where, you know, you guys would have had to make some serious adjustments based on the market conditions. And, you know, you've got probably you've got very strong competition out there and people flooding the market with all the craft brewery industry. And I just can imagine all the forces. And you mentioned like the provincial challenges, you know, and just getting across provincial borders. And, you know, there's no lack of challenges in your business.
Yeah. So I think that the first thing was just change is coming. And then after that, we're going to have more change. And then after that, more change. I think if I reflect back on 2008, there was an element of, well, why can't we just go back to the way it used to be? Why do we have to operate this way? Why is this happening or why is that happening? And so without getting the specifics across a lot of different spectrums of the business. So, you know, part of that is then talking and being and you have to be quite vocal about this is just the reality and trying to connect folks with, you know, if you think about the realities in their life at the time and how things were changing and how that applies to our business. And then from there, you know, you have to figure out which people are going to be able to join you on that journey of change and improvement. Because, you know, some are challenged by that. And you need to give people the appropriate amount of time, but not too much time. So there was, you know, there was definitely, some transition there. And then when I came in, I personally made a big commitment to safety in the organization. I thought it was one just vitally important. For the reason, first of all, it's morally the right thing, but also just the safer you are as an organization, the better you're going to perform. It's, you know, less accidents. You're doing things right the first way, and it was a way of challenging the organization to think differently. And so I'm very proud of that safety journey. And then from there, it became, okay, now that we've accepted change, we're on the safety journey, how do we just create this culture of improvement that it's not that we're never satisfied, it's just we're always looking at the biggest opportunities and how do we address that opportunity and then more forward. And then wrapping it all around that is our consumer. And often in business, we get the consumer and the customer mixed up. The consumer is the end user. You buy the product typically through a customer, but the consumer, particularly if you're consumer packaged goods, such as beer. So you go to a retailer or a bar, you buy, that's the customer, and the consumer buys it from them. And so you know, we need to meet the needs of our customers, but ultimately it's our consumers. The stronger our brands are and the more consumer pull we have, the better we'll all be. That would be sort of the big, if I look back over the last 15, 16 years, the big changes that we as a team attacked and implemented.
It's almost like cultural change, I'm hearing. You know, you had to address, you know, some things that needed to be shifted in the culture, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in many family businesses, if you go back 30, 40, 50 years, there was an element of, we won't tell you, so you don't have to worry.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How's the business? I don't, you know, doesn't, you know, we're not going to tell you if financials, we're not going to talk about things because we don't talk about that. But the corollary of that is, okay, well, just come to work and do your thing. And you just can't run a business like that. in the 21st century. So we've been much more open in terms of telling our employees and all of our employees in terms of performance and what's working well, what's not, and that's a journey, because there's an educational component to that. There's many people who they deal with revenue, they deal with the increases, decreases in costs or in revenue as part of their business, but there's others who don't. You know, they're coming in and they have a specific area, whether it could be IT, whether it could be production. And so lots of effort in terms of increasing business acumen across the entire workforce.
I think too, in listening to you speak about the change, which was the first one that you brought up. And in that, I hear that like you as a leader teach people how to navigate the small changes so that when the bigger changes come, they are more manageable. And it's like that we need to kind of learn how to ride the small waves first before we ride the big ones. But how much are we actually paying attention to those small waves and those small changes to be really able to learn about ourselves, our companies, our organizations, to be able to successfully navigate the bigger things?
Exactly. And having that self-awareness and that confidence. Oh, wow, that's a competitor, they're doing something different. Well, that looks stupid. That's not the response, right? The response is, well, they're pretty bright people. I wonder what they know that we don't know, or that they've. And then on the bigger stuff, I was very fortunate to have a mentor, and he just had an expression he called the brutal facts. And so often in business, it's gonna get better next year, or a certain employee, they're all of a sudden they're going to act differently, or this, it's most likely not going to happen. It's the reality of the situation. So you have to take the time to be comfortable and address that, and then figure out how you're going to react to that in a manner so that you can grow and you can win. But it's challenging because, and we all do it. There's a comfort zone with where we are today, and moving to something that is unknown. And I think the world we're living in today is just the pace of change is just so much quicker. And just because it worked 5-10 years ago doesn't mean it's working today, and certainly isn't going to work tomorrow.
No truer words were said. It's so true. You both have something in common that you may or may not be aware of, and that is that you both emceed a LARCH event. And I think that's pretty cool. I was just thinking about that. It just kind of came to me that I believe the first one that Frank McKenna was speaking at was you, Andrew. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, the folks in St. John, they asked me to get involved, and I was honored to. And it's, to me, LARCH is just, it's a great example of community. And it's a great example of, I would say, community at its best, and giving some folks who perhaps don't have all the advantages that some people have to still live fulfilling lives. And I've certainly gotten a lot more out of LARCH than I've given to LARCH. It's been very, very valuable, very valuable.
Yeah. Maybe we'll co-MC next year, Andrew.
That would be great, Emily. And one of the things, just to speak on LARCH for a moment, because the other speaker at that event was a gentleman named Martin Chasson, who's a buddy of mine, and I've known for many years. He's had now an adult son with intellectual difficulties. And the challenge becomes is, what happens to that individual when the parents die? Or as the parents age? And so LARCH has just done an amazing job of being able to transition those young adults into a meaningful life experience, which just as a parent just must be so relieving that that is taken care of, because obviously none of us are going to be here forever.
No, and Martin was actually on this podcast a number of years ago sharing it. And what was wonderful, Bobo, he just speaks from the heart, doesn't he? I appreciate you bringing that up, because there's a leader, right? And he was an executive with Xerox. He brought the contact centers into Atlantic Canada. He's just done some amazing things. So Martin is just an amazing individual, for sure. But it kind of leads me to like this idea of giving back. So that's obviously really important to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all of us who are in a position to give back, and the more you're in a position to give back, the more you should give back one way or another. But I also, and I talk particularly to our younger employees here at Moosehead, I mean, getting involved in volunteer and not-for-profit, it's just an amazing way to develop your skill set, to be exposed to different leaders, to be challenged. And so, yes, obviously it's giving back, but you can also get something out of it, particularly early in your career. And I can assure you I've gotten back a lot more from everything that I've been involved in than I've given. Just tremendous experiences, tremendous friendships. I think as I spoke to at the beginning, I grew up in Halifax. And 1993, moved from Halifax to St. John with my young family. And St. John's a relatively small place. Moosehead's relatively high profile. So it's sort of everyone knows Andrew, and Andrew doesn't know anyone. So I was talking to someone at Moosehead, and they suggested I get involved with the St. John Board of Trade. And it was just a lovely experience. I have an interest in that type of, call it, policy side of things. So I enjoyed the discussion and the work, but it just enabled me to create a strong network here. And then because of that, you want to grow the network. And particularly when you move to a new, at any time, but really if you move to a new community, if you can figure out a way to get involved somehow in volunteering, it's very, very helpful.
Yeah. And I love hearing you say about how, that you've received more back from L'Arche than what you have given. And I think that in giving in general, whether it is monetary or time, compassion, like we do always end up receiving more.
Oh, yeah. You know, most of us, we have what we need. So the opportunity to have these experiences is you know, really money can't buy them. But you have to stick your neck out there. Yeah, you have to challenge yourself. And it's sometimes we talk about it a lot at Moosehead, you know, you talk about how difficult it's to run a marathon. Running a marathon is not the hard part. The hard part is the first time you decide you're gonna go out and run and walk for 10 minutes just to start that journey, right? The last step of the marathon, that's, you know, people are cheering. That's easy. It's when you first go out Saturday morning at 7 a.m. And I think that's, if there's one message I could give to folks, is just the value of just putting yourself out there and challenging people to, there are lots of organizations out there that are looking for people to help out.
Dave, what I thought you were going to mention as the similarity was, because I know that Andrew is a cyclist.
Yeah, well, that there's that too.
Also, I mean, I want to dive into the like chat about beer topic. Obviously, you drink the beer. You don't just like produce it and market it and everything else.
Yeah. Beer is the third most popular beverage in the world.
Get out.
Yeah. After water and tea.
Tea number two. I guess so. Wow.
And I'm biased. I'm a firm believer that moderate consumption of beer is part of a healthy lifestyle. There is no fat in beer per milliliter or ounce base. There's more calories in skim milk than there are in a glass of beer. So I'm a firm believer that beer could be part of a healthy lifestyle, but it's like everything else. It has to be in moderation, and it has to be in conjunction with proper diet and exercise. Exercise is a big part of my life. One, I like it. Two, in order to function, to perform, I need to sleep. I'm not one of these people who can go on 5 hours a night. I need seven and a half hours of sleep every night. And we all have stress in our lives. And exercise is part of how I get rid of the stress, helps the sleep. And then I used to run a little bit, or not a little bit, a fair amount. I just found as I got into my late 30s that it's a lot of pounding on the joints. And that's when I moved over to cycling. And I really, really enjoy cycling. It's something you can do as a group, something you can do on your own. I can do it indoors. I can do it outside. It's one of the lovely parts of my life would be cycling.
Well, Emily will totally agree with that.
Yep. Definitely up there. Yeah. So what's your favorite beer, Andrew?
Any one that we make and you're buying. No.
There's the businessman we've been looking for.
Yeah. So what I would do is I am going to get to an answer here, but I cycle through all of our beers on a regular basis because I want to be making sure that that the quality and the taste is consistent with what where we should be. I also drink my competitor's beer on a regular basis. Now, you're not going to find me in St. John, New Brunswick, ordering a Bud Light at the local bar. That's not going to happen. You don't have to worry about that. I will figure out a way. And I predominantly drink beer. I think my favorite beer is Alpine Lager, which is more of an East Coast beer. It was created in 1937 by my grandfather, Philip Oland. And there's an interesting story here. He had gone to brewing school. He'd been exposed to lager beers, which use a different type of yeast, and they're lighter than ales, which are what we had been brewing prior. My great-grandfather was in Boston at the time having surgery, and they were chatting on the phone. And my great-grandfather said, I hear you have this new beer. I look forward to trying it, and perhaps we might even consider selling it. That Philip, my grandfather, paused and said, well, it's actually been on the market for about 2 weeks and it's doing rather well. So to me, that sort of defines, family businesses. Like the next generation, they have to ask for the order a bit. Like you have to push things a bit. Yeah, it can't be obnoxious and reckless, but you do have to, say it's, look, at some point, this is most likely going to be mine, and this is the direction that we need to go. And so I love beer, and I love working for a brewery. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
That description there, your great grandfather and your grandfather is a total nose in or hands out, right? Like, I mean, isn't that the perfect example? A small story. I'm a big fan of Moosehead. I always buy Moosehead products. I love Crack Canoe. It's kind of it's my favorite. It's just nice and light, and it goes down too well, actually. So the moderation piece is a little bit tricky, but it's only 3.5%. So I always feel a little bit better about that. So we're having a big party, and I would typically buy a 2-4 of Crack Canoe or Moose Light as one of the things. And someone coming to a party, I won't name who it is, is a big fan of Bud Light. So I thought, well, I should get some Bud Light. And we had some Crack Canoe already, or whatever, Moose Light, I guess, at the time. And I was walking out of the liquor store, and who do I run into but Patrick? It was a big thing. And I felt like I had to explain to him. I said, Patrick, like, I don't usually, like, Pat, like, I was just trying to, like, I was so embarrassed, right? Like, I was like, honestly, I felt like I had to explain. He just laughed and said, I'm like, no, but really, like, this never happened. So I went to the party and I told everyone, I said, look, you guys really screwed me here, man. Because I'm legitimately a huge fan. And there's nothing as a New Brunswicker, I think, is cooler than when I'm away somewhere and I inevitably see like a green bottle with the Moosehead sticker on it. It's a weirdly proud thing as a New Brunswicker. So I can only imagine what that must feel like for you.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I had received a LinkedIn message this morning, and it's a picture of Moosehead Rattler from Costa Rica.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's lovely, and I have endless stories of consumers, folks coming up to me and sending me images and things like that. And that's what we're trying to do each day, just build more and more of those. But Dave, your story of walking into the liquor store is cute, right? It's just, yeah. And I think the beer business does get in your, it really gets in your blood. And probably the only one that's similar would be sort of the Coke versus Pepsi thing. That's our vice president of sales and marketing, Trevor Grant, when I interviewed him, he was working for Pepsi, and this was many years ago, and we were using a headhunter. We were meeting at one of the headhunters, just meeting rooms, and they put a selection of soft drinks on the table, and they were all Coke products. And I could just see Trevor's, like, the steam coming out of his ears, and he was trying to focus as he had this can of Coke, like, within arm's reach. And that's one of the reasons I hired Trevor, because I just saw that passion. It really gets in your blood.
Loyalty. That's awesome.
Well, we're going to send you a Bud Light thank you package for being on the Boiling Point podcast.
Actually, you know, and there's one thing I want to comment on is if you have which you will, Emily, I'm certain, have the good fortune of interacting with the Moosehead Group in any capacity, they give you the best speaker gifts, like all the swag and product and everything. And you know, for someone who's a big fan, it's like, this is the best.
One fan at a time. Yeah.
Oh man, it's so great.
Are you just sitting in like a Moosehead onesie when you're home?
Oh yeah. Well, I was gonna wear some swag today, and I thought, it's going a little over the top. But super big fan, Andrew, and I've so enjoyed this conversation. Like, I really appreciate your perspective and humility in terms of sharing where you're at. I just think that's so valuable for other leaders to hear. And you know, many thanks for joining us today. I'm going to let Emily wrap it up because she'll have some wise thoughts, I'm sure. But you're always welcome to come back at any time. It's just been a real pleasure having you on.
Thank you very much, Dave. Appreciate it.
Yeah, ditto what Dave said. Andrew, I look forward to having the pleasure of meeting you in person and speaking for Moosehead so I can get my onesie. I'll take a Moosehead cycling kit. That's what it'll be, okay, for my speaker gift.
Sounds good.
And I request the swag. not only am I telling you that you're booking me as a speaker, I'm requesting my swag bag. But Andrew, thank you so much. Your insights were so valuable, I know, to me and so the listeners as well. And so we will list all of Andrew's information and any extras we discussed today in the show notes. And the best place to find all of that is on our website. We're active on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, and we will put the video version on YouTube and Facebook. And of course, the podcast is available on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Thank you for listening. Follow or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app or visit BoilingPointPodcast.com for more.
Hi, this is Candace Sampson, the voice behind What She Said. My show is your destination for stories that not only entertain, but also educate and empower. Every week, I spotlight strong female voices from across Canada, women who are changing the narrative and driving change. Don't miss out on these inspiring episodes. Subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music, or head over to whatshesaidtalk.com.
What She Said can also be heard on blasttheradio.com. Mondays at 5 p.m. and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. That's blasttheradio.com.
It's time to dive into the stories that truly matter.